This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Let's bring in Furman now. Bet the Board podcast. FS1, lock it in. Furman, I don't know how many laymen you do conversations with on radio around the country, but you know I'm one of the worst gamblers you ever talked to, right?
I'm just waiting for you to tell me how much you love the Kansas City Chiefs next Sunday, and I'll feel better about my prognostication that the 49ers will get their first Super Bowl in 25 years.
Okay, so we're on the same page. You think I suck at gambling. Okay. LT gave me all of college basketball, and all I had to do the other day was pick two teams, and just one of them had to make the Final Four for a stake. Now, I know those were long odds, but I feel pretty good about my picks. Tell me the chances of me getting either Villanova or Gonzaga to the Final Four. Was that a sucker bet?
Well, I don't think that objective is going to be that easy in the grand scheme of things, picking a team to get to the Final Four. When you look at this field, more wide open than I can remember in recent years, guys, when you talk about maybe it's 10 to 12 teams at most that can win a national championship, I think you could make the case that if the bracket were to fall the right way, there are 20 to 25 teams that might be able to cut down the net. I'm not as bullish on Villanova as some people out there now. You love what Jay Wright's done. Colin Gillespie, an elite scorer. But I worry about this team's shot selection, and while they've been a little bit unlucky in terms of missing open looks, I'm not sure they have the right makeup to get there. But this Gonzaga team is absolutely loaded, and I was surprised they fell from that top line in the AP poll. But we seem to say it every year. The biggest question you have about Mark Few's team when we get to March, will they be battle-tested going through the West Coast Conference? But I think this team is extremely talented and has a great chance to get to the Final Four.
Todd, before we get to Super Bowl 54, is there one team in college basketball on a neutral floor that would be favored over every other team in college basketball?
You know, this field, given the fact that it's so jumbled up at the top right now, my power ratings, I've gone back and forth a lot of the season with Kansas and Duke kind of alternating on that top line. We're probably a little bit more bullish, or we were on West Virginia than a lot of folks, but when the Mountaineers go out there and beat Texas by about 175 points, it opens up people's eyes. And the other team that mid-major-wise, you know, you always get a little skeptical because they don't play anybody through the Atlantic 10 portion of the schedule. We've had Dayton in our top five for about 8 weeks now. So I think the major media polls and a lot of the pundits have really figured out and isolated teams that are truly elite. Maybe Seton Hall is a team that's a bit of a sleeper, but if you're talking about teams that's favored over everybody, Kansas and Duke are going to be 1 and 1A.
Todd Furman is with us on the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline, bettheboardpodcast.com. Also see him on FS1 every single day. Lock it in. He is the former odds maker at Caesars Palace on Twitter, at Todd Furman. He will comment on some Super Bowl props we throw his way next week. He always likes to do that the week of the Super Bowl. I hate to speak for you there, Todd, but I'm just going on history that you like to do that the week of the Super Bowl. Is that okay?
Always good to try and wait till you have as much information at your disposal before people want to put you in your place if you don't happen to hit all 50 or 60 props that I'm sure we'll discuss next week.
I heard this yesterday on ESPN, and I even went to double check it because it's, I guess, an interesting stat about Jimmy Garoppolo. He's thrown over 300 yards only three times this year, once in that shootout at New Orleans, 48-46. The other two times were against Arizona. That's the only time he's crossed the 300-yard passing mark, which isn't spectacular in NFL play. That seems to be an important statistic for this game.
Well, I think the big thing that everyone is forgetting about with this 49ers team is they've been so critical of Jimmy Garoppolo through his first two playoff games, wins against the Minnesota Vikings in the divisional round, and, of course, the conference championship game against Green Bay. This is all by design. I still believe that if Coach Shanahan asked Jimmy Garoppolo to be the guy to go out there and make 30 to 35 throws at minimum, that he'd be more than capable of spreading the football around, getting the ball to George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, and Emmanuel Sanders, and winning the game with his arm. That Saints game, if that game had been stricken from the records and didn't exist, then I'd probably be a little bit more skeptical about some of his abilities. But you go on the road to hostile territory, to a game that turned into a shootout, it shows me that you have the makeup and the wherewithal to try and win games with your arm. Whereas everyone coming up to this game is going to say, well, Patrick Mahomes is a lot more accomplished. He's done this, that, and the the other. Jimmy Garoppolo is still 23-5 in his NFL career as a starting quarterback, and the 49ers' ground game has always been the strength. We saw that on full display in both of those playoff wins. Kyle Shanahan may ask Garoppolo to make some throws early like Ryan Tannehill did to loosen up that Chiefs defense. And if that's the case, I think he can pass the test with flying colors. But if San Francisco is going to be able to run the ball, I wouldn't be stunned if Jimmy Garoppolo throws it fewer than 25 times again this week.
I know Mahomes was out for a while, so this number is slightly skewed. But you made a point earlier this week. I'm not a stats guy. I don't always go look at them. But the Chiefs are third in the NFL scoring. The 49ers are second in scoring, you pointed out. So I you've already hinted you're going 49ers in this game. What makes the 49er offense tick to you, click to you? Why do you like them so much?
I like the creativity. It's kind of an exotic smash-mouth approach. You look at the way Shanahan has utilized his deep stable of running backs. We saw the first playoff game, Tevin Coleman, 22 carries, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. Then Raheem Mostert, once Coleman went down, filled in more than admirably with his 220-yard, 4-touchdown outburst. Matt Breida was the guy early in the season that was capable of running the football between the 20s. And we've just seen how much more effective this offense is, running the football and creating off of the play action with a healthy George Kittle out there. The 49ers offense struggled in the middle of the season. There were a couple weeks that won't blow you away by any stretch of the imagination. But everyone sees this team as a defensive-minded football team, one that's only capable of winning slugfest. This isn't the Baltimore Ravens back in 2001 with Trent Dilfer at the helm. They have a very good defense that can bring pressure with four on the defensive side. They can play coverage behind that, which I think will create some problems for Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs offense. And they're able to take 5 to 6 minutes off the clock every time they possess the football if they pick up 5 to 6 yards a pop. So when I look at the full makeup of these two teams, I think San Francisco is being sold extremely short because they don't have that face of the franchise at quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, where that seems to be the only position on the football field where the Chiefs are that much better.
Todd, with a total of 54, you know everyone is going to play this over. Last year, Super Bowl 53 was as under as it gets, 13-3, New England over the Los Angeles Rams. Have you ever seen a Super Bowl where the public actually plays the under?
I have not. I think everyone gets to this point in the season, they know they have one meaningful football game left until we get to Labor Day weekend when college football kicks off in earnest. They want to root for points. No one wants to sit and watch these games end 13-3 like we saw last season. But to your point, LT, if we go all the way back to 2000 and you look at totals that have been set in the 50s, the under's actually 5-1, and the average points per game scored in those Super Bowls is less than 39. Now, I'm not advocating for the under in this game. You play it out multiple times, and you go, okay, these two teams should be able to move the football quite a bit. But it's not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination, because if there's rust early on for two quarterbacks that have never played on this stage, you get a couple of long-time-consuming drives. All of a sudden, you're working against the eight ball that you're relying on the big plays, and you need so many things to happen to go over a total this high in the National Football League, knowing that you're still playing outside. It's not the fastest track in the league. I think it's a little bit of a leap of faith as this total keeps climbing closer to that key number of 55, 56.
I picture a guy drinking a gin and tonic, sitting over at the Sahara in some dark corner, betting the Pelicans. That's the kind of Pelican better I got until this year. Has Zion changed the description of people who bet on Pelicans? Are they a big play now in Vegas?
Well, it's one of those things that I learned years ago when I went to school for economics. When it comes to the stock market, you buy the rumor and sell the news. So right now, Zion is the news, and you're paying a premium to try and back the Pelicans. This is a team that coming into last night was 11-5, straight up 13-2-1 against the spread over their last 16 games. So their numbers are going to be inflated going forward, especially when Zion scores 17 straight points in his debut. I actually think there's going to be great opportunity betting against the Pelicans for, say, the next 3 to 5 games. Of course, so much of that is matchup dependent. But at the end of the day, star power forces you to pay a little bit more for these sides. And the Pelicans haven't been a sexy bet recently, but they sure will be now, which means betting against them will be where you can find all the value.
Finally, Furman, before you go, Tiger Woods starts his PGA Tour season today out at Torrey Pines. I don't know how you would put odds on this. I guess there are odds on Tiger winning a major this year. How would you feel?
He's a long shot to accomplish that feat. Not exactly insurmountable, but when you look at the way the season will lay out, I think Tiger at this point in his career, you're always going to want to make a case for him to win at Augusta. If he doesn't win there, it makes it a little bit more of an uphill battle given his style of play and everything else that goes into it. So the last check that I saw for Tiger to win a major this year was a price right around 4-1. Now, if you shop around a little bit, you're going to be able to find better odds or worse odds, as the case may be, knowing exactly how trendy he is to try and get that done. If you look at some of the other players out there, for example, Brooks Koepka to win a major is priced at plus 250. Rory McIlroy, the same price there. And if you believe Tiger will be able to pull off the Grand Slam this season, 500-1 the going rate. Yeah, cool ROI for a $5 bet, but you may as well light that money on fire. In my
yeah, go ahead and burn that one. Furman, thank you very much for the time. We'll see you next week.
Always a pleasure, gents. Enjoy the college basketball slate this weekend.
Absolutely, we will. That's all we got. We got to live on that. Todd Furman with us. BetTheBoardPodcast.com, FS1, lock it in every single day. He's on Twitter, at Todd Furman, and with us on the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline at your favorite retailer now in three flavors, strawberry mango or black cherry, only 100 calories, 2 carbs, and gluten-free.